And that just scares me. And I think that in business, in like building a business, so much of the actual challenges that founders face is they're kind of just like more personal things. Like at the end of the day, what's keeping me from hiring more people more quickly? Like it's like at the very root of it, it's like this human fear.
1 year after my first episode of Opening the Books with Nazrin Jafari, almost to the day, we are back. I've got Nazrin back on the show to talk about what has happened in her business since that initial coaching call that I recorded and passed along to you. The link to that is in the show notes. Go check it out if you have not watched or listened to that episode. You will learn a lot from that and you will get a lot of context for this conversation. Nazrin is back and we're talking about how her business has grown in the last year, the highs, the lows, the challenges, everything in between. If you are trying to grow a business in the early mid seven figures, which is where Nazrin's business is, you should listen to this. You will learn a lot. Let's dive in. Hello, Nazrin. How are you?
Hey, Andrew. How are you? I'm good.
I'm great. This is a funny thing to do because often when I do podcast intros with people, I say, hello, how are you? And we maybe chatted for a moment before we stopped. But in your case, we chat all the time. It's not, I already know how you're doing because we talk about it daily, you know, what's going on with you, with the business, all that kind of stuff. Because you and I have been working together for almost a year now. We didn't start working together right away after recording Opening the Books, but pretty close. And so we've been hammering away.
It's only been 6 months.
At your business for a little while. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind. So I was wrong. All right. But yeah, we've been working together after doing that Opening the Books episode. Tell people who you are and tell people what your business is so they have some context for this conversation.
Yeah, sure. So hi, I'm Nazrin Jafari. I'm the founder and designer of Mixed. We are an apparel printwear brand, fashion brand, completely bootstrapped, launched in 2021. Now we're looking at a mid-seven-figure business. And yeah, based in Brooklyn.
Awesome. And... Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Based in Brooklyn. That's great. We've been at it for a little while. In that Opening the Books episode, I mean, we were talking about, you were actually the one who pointed out before we started talking about sort of how it had been a year since we had talked. You noticed that it had been, at the time of recording this, it was a year ago yesterday that we recorded that episode. And the little comment you made to me that I'm curious to hear you unpack is that you're in a very different headspace now than you were then. And so what did you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, so last year when we got on the podcast, it was kind of when the ad account had just started to take off. I was still doing ASC campaigns, not much visibility in terms of the like unit economics of my, I mean, I had some visibility, but I think the big thing was that like everything was on pre-order at that time. And so I wasn't dealing with returns in a consistent flow. And so I kind of got hit with a big returns bit about a month after we recorded. I didn't have visibility in terms of what was the daily contribution margin of the business. So, and I also didn't have a cash flow planner, which now I have one that just goes out till the end of the year. Thank you to Bill for that. So yeah, I think everything was happening for the first time. So it was really exciting, but I had no context. I'd never seen that before, not much visibility in my business to really be able to harness everything that was taking off. And so I think now I've been around the block. The ad account has taken off again. And but this time I kind of, especially with your help, know how to manage that, know how to plan for that in terms of inventory, in terms of cash. And I just, yeah, I feel more confident.
That's really awesome. And that is not surprising to me to hear. You definitely seem more confident than when we first talked. When we first talked, it was like lots of broad questions and unknowns. And that's fine. There's nothing to be like sheepish about there. Like it's, you were starting the business. You've done it yourself. You had just reached right around seven figures. You were getting right there for the first time. And so there's just so much you don't know when you're in that place about sort of what it takes to run the business at that stage. You can sort of paper over a lot of things when the business is that small, but as it starts to grow, you have to start to figure out all kinds of planning for the business. That's a lot different. You know, you mentioned a few things there. You're tracking daily contribution margin. Shout out Bill D'Alessandro, who you can actually listen to. Still one of my most popular episodes I've ever done was his episode on contribution margin. I'll link that in the show notes. And how rigorous he is about tracking that in his business. And then he's helped you do the same in your business. And I know helps some other entrepreneurs do that. You can always reach out to Bill if you're interested in helping set up some reporting around that. And yeah, so that happened. We've got a cohort forecast, which is something that we talked about then and still talk about. It's been at times wildly wrong and at times shockingly correct and all over the place. This is very normal for a business in your stage. Like, it's just really hard to predict growth when you're trying to go from, you know, 1 to 2 in a year. We were right around just a little over 2 million last year, right, in revenue. Yep. And you're trying to go from there to 10 and you know, over a year or two or whatever it is, you're just going to miss. The future is too unlike the past to get your cohort forecast right. But we've got it tied in to a cash planner, which is awesome. So now those two things work together. So cash and forecast can go together. And the longer we go, the better we'll get at predicting your revenue and those kinds of things. One of the things that's been really interesting about that is where the places we've been wrong on the forecast has been. You've got like a more conservative forecast that you use. And then I've got my forecast. And at times you're like, you're getting mad at me. Like, Andrew, you're way over forecasting this. And at times I am. And then at times I've been right. So it's been back and forth. But in the midst of that, do you want to talk a little bit about sort of the things that we have and haven't seen coming? I'm thinking especially of like seasonality and product drops. Maybe also it would help for people to know what your core product is, which you're wearing right now, one version of it anyway. So if you're watching this, that's part of it. But yeah, maybe you can talk through sort of some of those dynamics in the business. I think this is pretty normal for an apparel business, but stuff that we're still kind of learning as we go. Seasonality, product release, etc.
Yeah, sure thing. So Mix primarily sells jumpsuits. So in terms of, if you don't know what a jumpsuit it is, it's like a full body pant and top outfit. And I think what's great about it is that visually, from an ads perspective, it's one and done. It's a full outfit. It's really visually striking in an ad. The downside is that in terms of fit, it can be a little bit more tricky. There's a higher return rate associated with jumpsuits. And yeah, so we are primarily a jumpsuit brand. We have prints and we do denim, and both have performed really well. The denim particularly has really taken off for the brand recently. In terms of season.
Yeah, but your prints have done awesome in the past too. It's worth noting. Like, denim is definitely more mass market, but you've got some of these brighter, bolder kind of patterns that have always been a big part of it. I'm thinking of it, you know, Ruby and some of those where it's like core products. So it's not just mass market denim. It's like you've got these really striking pieces as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, in my experience, it's not that every product is equally as successful. What we've experienced has been there's a handful of products that just really crush and people really resonate with. They do really well in ads, and that really carries a lot of the business. And then, you know, the rest of the 80% of inventory, it sells through, but just not at the high, like at the same volume as something like denim, or like you mentioned, our Ruby print or Pink Nana print. And so I think that kind of speaks to why product drops are so important in specifically apparel and fashion brands, is that from my perspective, like, product just, it drives so much of the ad success and ad performance. We actually, so Andrew was suggesting, and I know you've done episodes about this, long form ads where we're basically, you know, talking through the product, giving everything that a customer might want to know or a potential customer would want to know, answering any questions or doubts they might have. So for us, that means talking about the fit, talking about the design, talking about the fabric, the material, et cetera. So they're literally like 3 minute long videos of me speaking to camera, wearing the piece, talking about it. I didn't think that that was actually going to work super well for the brand, because in fashion, it's more about, like, you know, psychology. You want it to feel like cool. You want it to feel confident. And my thought was, if you had to describe all of these physical attributes that you would kind of take away from that. But what we've seen is that these long forms have really worked for the brand. But it's also made our revenue super like peaky, in that, you know, in January was when our first long form, which was for the Ruby jumpsuit, took off. I think like in sales, it did about like 120,000 in a week. And we've had that experience with the Ruby jumpsuit. We've had it with the denim boat neck, which I'm wearing now, and a couple different products. So like our standard denim jumpsuit, and it's great. It's exciting. It also then creates other issues in terms of inventory, cash planning, supply chain. But yeah, I think, I'm not sure if I answered all your questions or like answered the question you were asking, but.
Oh, I think you definitely did. But like some of the dynamics that are really crucial there that I think is really common in apparel businesses, which is first of all, wrestling with return rates, really normal in apparel businesses, I think. That's definitely a challenge for a lot of them. And in your case, it's particularly high. That jumpsuits are such a difficult thing to get people to buy online because of the fit element of it. They have to fit just right, and people feel nervous about if they're going to fit exactly right. And that I think people feel even a little like customers, in my experience, and here I'm leaning heavily on what my wife says about buying jumpsuits, is that just like there's almost a little nervousness about like, do I look silly or something in this? And if it doesn't fit exactly right, then you know, whatever. So that's like a really common challenge in apparel businesses. And I think the other thing there that's interesting is the element where each product is sort of its own bet that you make, you know, and some products are going to even if it's cut exactly the same, the design changes the outcome of the product significantly, the pattern, the material, et cetera. Or on the other hand, the pattern and the material are exactly the same, but the cut or the design is different. You know, you're wearing your, I think that's the boat neck, right? Is that right? Yeah, that you're wearing right now, right? But the neck on that jumpsuit being different, or the sleeves being different, or something like that, same exact material potentially can sell really, really differently. And it's sort of one of the challenges of apparel, I think. And those are really, really normal things. I think the other thing that I was really, and so anyway, so what you're getting out there around product drops is this really core challenge in the business, which is when you release new products, it's these big crucial moments, and we've had some of them go great, exceed expectations, and others really miss expectations on some of the product drops that you've done. And it's so crucial to making this business work is that like new product is one of the core things that drives the business forward. And there's all these dynamics in the way that that actually plays out. Because we can do a great job on ads, we can push, you know, great media buying, we can do these long form explainers, and we can talk about that more in a second, I think. That's all helped. Like the long form explainer thing was a big unlock for us. It really, really worked for this brand uniquely, powerfully. But in the midst of all of that, you run that with product A versus product B, basically the same ad, and then you have wildly different outcomes, you know? And so like I'm curious how you're thinking about that in terms of future product development as well. And we've talked about this some, obviously, but sort of as you go to design, I think your summer is designed already, but you think about fall or something. You know, how are you thinking about the reality that product design is such a crucial part of what is going to make the brand work or not, and trying to hit as many hits as you possibly can?
Exactly. So I think, like you mentioned, product and marketing are kind of like the key levers of growth right now in the business that I'm seeing. To speak to seasonality, so what we notice is that the spring summer is just that's the key season for Mix, because a lot of our silhouettes and our patterns, they're colorful, they are sleeveless, they're just suited for the warm weather, vacation. And what we see in like the fall, winter is that people, you know, they just don't purchase at the same rate, because I don't think the product is as well suited for the fall, whether because it's not warm enough, or maybe it's just too colorful for people's taste in that season. And so for fall this year, my goal is to come out with coats and outerwear and more, you know, black jumpsuits, going more neutral tones. I think before I used to be afraid and think that like, you know, I'm known for prints, I'm not able to sell solid color, more mass appeal type items. But I think the denim has clearly shown me that that's not the case, that I could sell something that you technically, you know, you could find denim anywhere else, but that there's something about the silhouette or the brand or whatever it is that people like enough to purchase at our price point. So yeah, I think for fall, winter, it's about coming out with outerwear, coming out with a product that's more appropriate for the season. And also, like with outerwear and with coats, that's the thing that's visible in that season on someone's body. So we get a lot of word of mouth. The jumpsuit, again, it's just like it's so visible, it's super striking. So people are often, you know, asked, where did you get that? Or like, what's that brand? And you kind of lose all of that word of mouth and that visibility in the fall, because everything is layered on top of with another brand's coat. And so how can we be that outer layer? I also had this like experience. I've bought like a couple coats from different brands that like my friend joked the other day, like became my whole personality, because it was just a super, it was a cool coat. You saw it on me every day because it was my outer layer. And I could literally wear sweats underneath, but I would still look really good and put together. And so that's really what I'm trying to do for our fall winter product.
If you, like Nazrin, are trying to grow your business while keeping an eye on your OpEx, being smart about your investments, you must consider working with an incredible team of e-commerce professionals to fill the needs in your business from the Philippines. Go staff incredible talent. I'm not talking about just like virtual assistant level talent. I'm saying like people with deep e-commerce resumes across supply chain, operations, design, marketing, all kinds of areas of the business from the Philippines. You can find incredible talent there. Pay them a premium rate in the Philippines, which will be less than you'll pay that same talent in the US. Everybody wins, and you can locate that talent by going to morenow.co/AF to work with my friends at More Staffing. My entire design and production team is built off of a team that was staffed by More Staffing. It's up to 5 folks for my business, and they're great. I love them. I love working with them. They do a great job. It has been a very smooth and easy process finding, attracting, recruiting that talent, and they've been a key part of my team along the way. I just don't know why, if you're running an e-commerce business at this point and you are already a remote team, you would not consider finding incredible talent from the Philippines. So go do that by going to morenow.co/AF. morenow.co/AF. The link's in the show notes, and get connected to my friends at More Staffing today. So much of this game, we could talk a lot about contribution margin. We could talk a lot about cash forecasting. We could talk a lot about bid caps and CBOs and broad targeting and all the things that I talk about a lot. I think it all matters. But when I think about the story of Mixed right now, I think there's like these two parallel tracks, which is getting the sort of like operational excellence required at this stage of business going. I think we've checked a lot of those boxes, to be honest with you. Like it feels like we talk a lot less about that stuff these days and a lot more about the reporting is set and all those. On the other hand, there's this parallel track, which is like the product and the brand. And now like the game for us to keep growing here is every product release at some point, every sale. There's there's a third thing in there, which is the supply chain as you scale that, which is definitely a major area of focus right now. But I think the way you're talking about that is so interesting. This idea of like, if we can get coats, it can be outerwear that can, potentially create word of mouth. It can be a big part of people's personality in fashion. That's just like so much of the game. And it's funny, like these are kind of the areas where I go like, mm-hmm. I just kind of nod along and say like, great. That's what I'm glad you're thinking about that, because this is where I'll be very little help to you on the brand. You know, I wear the same 3 things all the time and, you know, I'm totally disconnected from the world of fashion, but that's part of hopefully the goal of having a good team, is that you've got people who sort of are contributing these different areas. So you tried suits in the fall, which is interesting. Talk about that a little bit. How did suits go?
Yeah. I mean, so suits didn't do as well as our jumpsuits did. I think there's a couple reasons here. One, the AOV was much higher. So a full suit set was 420, whereas a jumpsuit is 228. And I'm actually thinking to raise the price on that. Curious to hear what your thoughts are on that. But yeah. So one, the AOV was higher. 2, it was more occasion wear. And so it wasn't something people could wear every day, whereas the jumpsuit, you can wear that once a week. So you might be able to justify a 200 plus purchase if you're going to wear that, you know, weekly. Whereas a suit, you might have, you know, 1 or 2 reasons a quarter to wear it. So I think the occasion aspect of it and... Yeah, I think those were probably the 2 major ones. Also, it's not, I guess it was somewhat fall, like winter appropriate, but if you're wearing it in the winter, you might have to wear another coat on top. So what I do think the suits did well, though, is I think it positioned us with a more like celebrity influencer, like performer. Yep. Kind of audience, where we had a lot,
and we've seen that, right? Yeah. like significant celebrities posting for free,
because they love the suits, they love the pieces, and oftentimes when I'm doing, let's say, a profile shoot or a spotlight with a more well-known creator or celebrity, the thing that they'll ask to be shot in is the suit. So I think, you know, Rachel, who has been advising me a bit recently, has had me started to think about customer personas and how is the product assortment that we're creating at Mixed catering to different personas. So there are some people who want that everyday statement wear, and, you know, they're a larger, maybe as of now, a larger percentage of the customer base. And then there's also the people who love the denim, who are a little bit more like utilitarian. There's the people who want the occasion wear. So like, how do we create product that caters to these, this like the full range of the customer base, and also though keeps an eye towards like what percentage of the customer base wants occasion wear versus more everyday utilitarian wear. And I think the mistake was that with fall, we did, the entire collection was based around suits, which I think was exciting from a marketing standpoint because we could really shine a light on this new product. But to kind of bet all of your eggs in this unknown basket, I think that can be where it's tricky. And so how can we do a suit capsule, you know, where it's three pieces, where we test the product. If the product does well, then we do more of that rather than, you know, putting a lot of money behind product development and, you know, supply chain behind something that maybe doesn't work as well as we wanted to.
Compare that to spring, your spring launch, really jumpsuit heavy with some rompers mixed in as well, right? Which is jumpsuit with shorts. Yes. A dude like me who didn't know.
Yeah. So the spring drop really exceeded my expectations. We did, I think, like $75,000 on launch day, which I think before then, the largest launch to date was maybe like 40 grand. So almost doubling that. The denim boat neck, which I'm wearing now, like led a lot of that purchase. But, you know, when I focused with that, well, I think one that speaks to the seasonality bit, again, spring, summer is when people are really getting excited to wear mixed again. Even me personally, I can see like my wearing patterns. And in the fall, winter, I don't wear as much mixed because it's not suited for the season. And so I can already feel now I'm getting excited. I'm seeing like I'm getting the mixed out into the closet. I'm seeing our customers like post on their stories that they're starting to wear it. So I think that the seasonality bit helped a lot. I think the focus on everyday statement wear. So again, things that people could, when I say everyday, things that people could wear once a week and really justify the like higher AOV for, higher price point for. And I think obviously the prints. I think the prints, if it resonates, then does well. If it doesn't, then they don't do well.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, like the how much the differences are in those, like fall. You know, I had us over projected for launch and holiday, both. They were just not as big as I had expected. I expected us to be awesome there. Spring, I had us projected a little more aggressively, and we even exceeded that. I think we went through it and just kept working. A lot of stuff we launched into the ad account worked great, so that the launch went sort of the way you want launch to go, which is really heavy returning customer revenue on launch, where you've got all these customers who are engaged and you're pushing on all that, and it's it just goes awesome. And then from there, and this is how a lot of launches go, right? You take the new products that you have and those become fodder for the ad account. And so now we created all of this content and pushed really, really far forward. And now we've seen some of that slow down a little bit recently, and are trying to figure out what's going on there, but had, you know, we're able to get through, I don't remember, like 150 grand or something in spend in a month, you know, at a really, really strong return. And that was based off of new product, new content around that new product, et cetera. And so much of this game now is like, how do we keep scaling product release, sales? At some point we've hesitated on sales because of inventory concerns, but those kinds of moments in this business that are going to drive it forward. And over again, I see this with apparel brands and sort of like product oriented brands in general. I did an episode the other day. I released it. Actually, I think maybe it'll be the most recent episode by the time this comes out, besides this one, about like different types of businesses, basically like people starting to think through, I've categorized five different kinds of D2C businesses that sort of push forward based on different factors. Right. And apparel, and there are other categories like this where it's like pretty good margin, but not incredible, pretty good LTV, but not incredible. And the way you push the business forward is product release, is moments, is the marketing calendar. The marketing calendar is the way you do it. And so this game becomes, as you start scaling up your team, like, you know, you spend less time doing things that other people can do, right? Like I can't design products, but we can run the ad account. We can push on this, and you do the things that only you can do, which is in your case, product design, and planning. And then also you make a ton of content as the founder of the brand, you know, with Mixed by Nazrin right there in the name, you are Nazrin, you are on the camera, you're showing you're really comfortable on camera, you do a great job. And so you scale up those kinds of things, and that's stuff that I can't do for you. That's stuff that, you know, we can work with some creators and all that. And we're efforting that now, you know, to try to expand out so you don't have to make all the content, but that's the kind of stuff that you do. And I think this is really normal in businesses in this stage, early mid seven figures, somewhere in there, which is about where we are, right? Mid seven figures. We're going to for sure more than double again this year. Like it's going to be a good move, good year forward. So much of the game is like, how do you expand? How do you, begin to take some things off your plate without creating too much OPEX and putting yourself into a point where there's just like, it's just becomes too expensive, to have a whole team that you're putting all this time into. I know that's something you've wrestled with a bunch, is sort of thinking about your OPEX and when do you invest in adding to your team versus when do you stay more conservative? And even we've talked recently, I know your mind is shifting on this kind of point a little bit as well. Talk about how you're thinking about OPEX, how you've thought about it so far. You've done an incredible job of like really hunting down costs that are unnecessary in the business so far, which has probably saved your business at points, yeah. Right? Being so careful about that. So talk about that journey and how you're thinking about that.
Yes. So I think, as like a little bit of context for me, my parents were both immigrants. My dad had a wholesale business. He was like a solo business, wholesale grocery, never hired an employee. The way he made money was by saving money. And I think just like through osmosis, through that cultural thing, really soaked up that like a penny saved is a penny earned kind of mentality, which I think when you're bootstrapping, it's really helpful in the beginning. It takes you so far because you know how to do a lot with a little. I think a lot about where is my time and my money best leverage? Where is it best spent? And so it's helped me a lot, I think, to get into this like early mid seven figure stage. And what I'm rubbing up against now is that in order to grow, you have to make more cash investments. You have to kind of grow that OPEX, albeit the right way in the right places. And that just scares me. And I think that in business, in like building a business, so much of, the actual challenges that founders face is they're kind of just like more personal things. Like at the end of the day, what's keeping me from like hiring more people more quickly? Like it's like at the very root of it, this like just human fear. I made some like hiring decisions last year that weren't the right hiring decisions that caused just a lot of heartache, had to do layoffs, which really sucked. And I think what you had mentioned, Andrew, in terms of how can I delegate the tasks that that someone else can do and hold on to the tasks that I uniquely need to do in this business, was not a frame of reference I had last year. I also last year didn't have a target upside and downside forecast for how I was planning my OPEX. So now I have, and I kind of come back to it every month, a target. Here's where we are. Here's where I think we're going, downside and upside. So I can see if I make this OPEX change, for the next 8 months of the year, how is it going to like, what will be the worst case scenario? And I think kind of planning for that worst case scenario has really helped me feel more confident about where I'm spending OPEX and what that percentage looks like. So, you know, up until now, like OPEX has been 12%. And I think that that's pretty solid. Now, as I think about, again, where is the time and money best leveraged for me? That is being able to create more content and fodder for creative and the ad account at scale. And then also some kind of like more coordination admin stuff that allows me to focus more on product and content. And so as we add those bits to the OPEX, that percentage is going from like 12 to 16 is what nothing has been, no trigger has been pulled yet, but I'm looking at everything right now. I'm kind of putting the puzzle pieces in and getting ready to do that. Probably like starting next week, putting those calls out, finding those right people, et cetera.
The truth is you're in the hardest phase, yeah, of OPEX too, because I've talked about this a lot on the show, but like one of the core principles to me of D2C is that the advantage of it as a business model, and I am team DTC is a business model. Some people sometimes dispute that. Is DTC a channel or a business model? I think it's a business model, at least for a while. And this is one of the reasons why. There's a distinct thing about D2C as a business model, which is you can run it with a very low OPEX. You can run it with a pretty low headcount. It's one of the advantages of the thing. If you have to have a big retail presence or something, sometimes that in some way it creates jobs in the company and marketing people who have to go design stuff and run out, whatever. Anyway, if you run D2C, there's you can run with a very low OPEX as a percentage of revenue and it scales awesome. So like, you know, we're talking about, you know, you've got us right now, you've got AGF Growth. You have a little bit of advisory help from some coaches in some strategic areas, but that's a small cost, relatively speaking. You've got a little bit of, you know, help in your office there, which you're sitting in, and, you know, packing orders, those kinds of things. But then, you know, you're starting to think more about now, how do I like get the supply chain to a place where it's getting the attention that it deserves? Because managing the supply chain, especially in an apparel business, is actually really challenging. You've got to manage how much fabric you're buying and then how much fabric goes to, gets cut and sewn, and like all of the different elements of managing an apparel supply chain, which is just really different than running a lot of other supply chains. It requires a lot of attention. There's a lot of demand planning stuff that's challenging, and demand planning is basically impossible in this stage of business anyway. So like we said, right, you create a product launch, and you have to figure out which things are going to sell and which things aren't. And you probably have some instincts around that, but it's tough. So putting some attention on that is going to cost some money. And the thing is, it costs about the same amount of money to do that at mid seven figures as, let's say, 15 million in revenue. Like, it probably requires a little more attention, but not linearly proportionally more. And so the cost of investing in that part of the supply and, you know, supply chain help or something is going to feel a lot more expensive today than it's going to feel in the near future. The same is going to be true. You know, we've talked about bringing on email marketing help or something like that. Like, same thing. It costs essentially, notwithstanding some Klaviyo fees or Sendlane fees or whatever the case may be, right? It costs essentially the same amount of money to send an email to 1,000 people as it does 100,000 people, you know, at least on the design and email strategy side. And so an email agency would be expensive today, potentially, relative to your total revenue, but scales cheap. And this is really normal in the mid seven figures. You're starting to have more stuff to do that is really hard to do on your own. And yet you also don't have the economy of scale quite yet. And so you have to be really careful about it and do exactly what you said. I think what you said there is exactly what I would advise anybody to do. Create three forecasts. Take your middle forecast and then give a downside scenario and an upside scenario. And the downside scenario protects you from a spot where like you are overburdening your team and you have to go fire a bunch of people or whatever it is, you know. And by doing that, you protect yourself against, okay, I can make this investment even if the margin expansion that I'm going to get from it is going to come later, not now. And that's the goal. So I mean, I love the way you're thinking about that. And so far, keeping a low op, very low OPEX as a percentage of revenue has been really, really helpful for you.
I think it's been super helpful. Like in the first quarter, like Q1, I was just like happy as a clam, very calm. I think probably the calmest and most confident I've been in the business, which to be fair, like it was great to have that period after coming out of a period where I really had to turn things around, really had to cut costs and make some difficult decisions. Q1 was just, it was great. Cash in the bank account, moving that into like a high yield, like having enough to make it make sense to move it into a high yield account was great. And now I'm kind of, back to a place of like, okay, how can we be maybe a little bit more, like how do we, maybe, I don't even know. I mean, you can tell I'm wrestling with this in real time because it's like, how much profit do we want to choose to forego and then put that back into growth versus like just keeping that money and pocketing it because I hadn't done that initially. And that was a mistake I made, which I've now corrected.
Okay. Let's do a little bit of tactical stuff. You mentioned the long form explainer. I remember on our opening the books, we talked about planning contribution margin. We talked about thinking about, you know, unit economics, which is core to the contribution margin plan. We talked about getting a cohort forecast and cash forecast in place. Check, 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 check. You've done all those things to your credit. I have coaching calls sometimes with people and I tell them what I think they should do. And they go, thanks. And then they never do it. And so you have been like so awesome about getting those things in place. Certainly with some help, but that's how it goes, right? Everybody needs help on stuff like that. And so like you've done all these things to set up the core of the business. And then we also talked about product releases and sales. I remember in that episode, we talked about that cycle in the marketing calendar there. Check again, like we've got a marketing calendar that we're planning out, you know, being fluid with it relative to inventory and some of those things, but that's also normal. And then we have also, we talked about in that episode, the Meta Ads account and what we can do to push that forward. You had done very well on your own. You were getting a 3 or 4 to 1 at the time we were talking, you were right into peak season. But we have moved to a setup that I suggest to a lot of people. I think you were skeptical of both the setup and the creative at first.
I'm on Team VidCap. I cannot believe it.
Yeah, you're not the first to be skeptical and to and also with the long form explainer. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about our setup a little bit and what your concern was and some of those things, but just because I think there's people who listen to this and watch us and want the really tactical input. How have we scaled? Maybe you want to talk through how we've scaled our spend, especially when it's been successful and it hasn't always worked perfectly or anything like that. But yeah.
Yeah, so I'll say my perspective and you can add in whatever tactical points I
have. Sure.
So, you know, yeah, when we had done opening up the books, our first episode last year, I was running everything on ASC. And like you said, I was getting 3-4 to 1. And so I really believed in ASC because that's all I'd ever run. And it was working for me. So, you know, that was kind of like my gospel at the time. And so when you had suggested bid caps, I think I tried bid caps at some point, but it just wasn't spending much, even for what was spending on ASC. And so anyways, I just didn't venture down that path until you came on it and took over the account in October. And my perspective now on bid caps is that, you know, like it's not a bug, it's the future in terms of like whether it spends on an ad or not. If it's not spending, it's probably because the creative isn't good enough or the algorithm doesn't think that it's going to get the kind of return and result you want. So what I really appreciate about the bid caps, well, let me also backtrack. We've seen, and I've seen these bid cap ads really scale. So our denim, our Ruby, you know, in 1 week doing yeah. 120 grand, like that a lot of that was being driven by bid caps. So my initial kind of skepticism around, oh, bid caps don't spend, was completely obliterated when I saw that, no, they do in fact spend depending on the creative and the product. I think for me, the great thing is that I just like can sleep peacefully at night knowing that I'm not overspending and knowing that it will, if it's spending, it's a good sign. And if it's not spending, that's just like a signal for me to create new creative. So I'm never like with the ASC, I was always looking, updating the ad account and saying like, okay, what is my ROAS right now? What is it, you know, what's the efficiency looking like? Am I overspending? And if I was overspending, I honestly wouldn't have known, like I didn't know if I was or not. And so I think with the bid cap, it just kind of gives me more peace of mind. And it's safe. So it decreases my downside, which I think is great.
Well, and to be fair to you, you know, when we first started launching them, it didn't work that well. We had gone from like spring, summer, things had gone awesome for you. And then into the fall, yeah, I was beating my head against the wall. I mean, I was going like, I remember at the time I was like, I'm sorry. Like, I feel like you hired me to like help push this thing forward. And I expected our holiday to be really big. I projected a really big holiday.
Well, I was not expecting holiday to be big. So
I know. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No. I just think, I mean, that is like the initial onboarding. You came on during the fall, which is like our lower season. And so I think the expectation it was misaligned because you were walking into a brand where you had certain expectations, but the reality was something else. It was also still such a new, and it still is such a new brand that it's hard to say like what's going to do well in what season. There was no historical data at the time. This is really the only like second year at, if you might want to call this scale. So what I do really appreciate that I want to say is that, in those early months, I was kind of like, is it worth it to like spend this money? And I think you were just so, you sent me an email saying like, I just want us to win together. And so like, here's what we can do. And that just gave me the confidence to feel like, all right, like, yeah, you're not just trying to like make a buck off of me. Clearly have a lot of different clients you can work with. And I was really honored that you chose, you know, to work with me at the size I was at the time. And but yeah, that more so you wanted to win together and that really paid off spring, summer. And I think again, seasonality that product speaks.
Yeah, I mean, there just was a world where, you know, percentage of spend deals, everybody's always nervous that just like you're just going to run up the bill or something like that because, you know, you've got a percentage of spend and all that. But this is constantly something I say. It's like, I actually think percentage of spend works great for us to work together in the phase that we're at. Yeah. It allowed me to invest at an earlier stage in a business than I otherwise would in a lot of cases, because I thought like, I see the upside here. We just have to get there together. You can't pay me a flat fee that I could take basically that I would want to take. There's no way. I wouldn't advise you to do it if you'd asked. And so, yeah, it allowed us to do that. And the commitment is just like, no, we're just going to go get there together. So yeah, that was I'm glad that it worked out. I'm glad you didn't fire me. so the, yeah, but So yeah, to your point though, I had expected it to be better and I was beating my head against the wall. And it was just a classic case of, I was kind of doubting, like, gosh, is the bid cap thing not working here? Do I need to push on it? When you were running all ASC, et cetera. And just to be clear, like, I don't have a problem running ASC campaigns. You're the only account I have with one very small amount. And it's partly a returning customer revenue strategy for us. There's no existing customer cap on it. It's probably not worth totally diving into. It's a very small part of our spend, but the ASC is a great tool in one respect, which is that it forces you into what I think are a lot of best practices. It's broad targeting. Mm-hmm. It puts a bunch of creative into one place, which allows the machine learning to increase and decrease spend at its per ad, instead of running ABO, like, you know, you control the amount of money going to each ad set, et cetera. Right. And so in that respect, it gets you really far. And you were doing these like lifetime budgets a month at a time or something. Yeah. You just sort of set a spend. And I actually think that worked pretty well in its own way, because it would allow Meta to ride up and down with available volume over the course of a month instead of forcing it to spend a certain amount per day. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that you were doing that I actually think worked pretty well. And you know, if anybody goes back and watches that Opening the Books episode, you'll find really awesome performance in an early stage, which is because ultimately the driver of performance is the creative and the product. But the media buying definitely can help. And what we've seen really happen is that when we launch ads that work with product that work, mm-hmm. we have seen this thing where you go 4x, 5x the spend day over day with new creative, just like that. And that's the thing that I think people just really miss out on when they don't run manual bids, is that your ads can scale so much faster than you think. And then they can also suppress spend right when it should. And so even this month, we've again run into some more challenges. We're doing okay, but we're just not doing nearly as well as we thought we were doing. It's not business threatening or anything like that, but it's just been harder than we thought, not as good as last year in this time of year in some respects. And the temptation is always like, ah, gosh, go raise the bids. It's something is wrong with the media buying or whatever. But the moment you do that, the same thing happens every single time, which is like your performance just gets worse. It's all that happens. Like, it's just not worth doing in the way that you would expect it to be helped. The media buying is the bids. The machine learning isn't broken. And this is the thing that people are always worried about with bid caps. Like, oh, it's not spending on the right things. That's probably not the problem. The problem is the creative isn't good enough, et cetera. And there's another thing that you've done really specifically with our ad account that is really, really to your credit, which is that you have a really good way of focusing your attention on the next right thing in a way that I think is pretty unique. You are excellent. I don't know if I've ever even told you this, but you are excellent at this. On the creative side, we started seeing these long form explainers work. Well, I'll put one in the show notes so that people can see what these ads are like. As long as that's okay, Nazrin, so people can see at least one of them. And it is different. I hesitated to run these as much as I love this concept for a lot of brands, because I thought, like, it's apparel. Like, you just need to show how pretty it is, basically, and people will click and maybe they'll buy. That is the classic apparel playbook. You know, DPAs work great for most apparel brands, et cetera. But what we discovered was that jumpsuits maybe are a little different in this respect, because they maybe require more explanation. Here's the fit. Here's how you button or zip it. Here's how stretchy it is or not. All of these things that are actually questions that customers have about a jumpsuit before they buy it. And these long form explainers, and I think it also helps that you're the designer and can talk through it all in this unique way. So these have worked awesome for us. And you, once they started working, got into your studio and recorded like 20 of them or something, like, so fast. And you just kept running. I think we've sold out too much product, so you've run out of product to do more, but you were actually stopped from doing even more of them by that. And you are so fast at this. And to me, this is like one of the great reasons why we've seen some success. Again, we're going to more than double this year, pretty for sure. Like, the part of the reason for that is that you have turned around, and once this creative has worked, you've gone and been like, great, let me get you way more of it. And we've absolutely hammered that stuff into the ad account. By the time we went to our spring launch, you had recorded long form creative for nearly every piece in the capsule, you know? So I think it's a perfect illustration of how these things work together. You find the creative that works, you run it through bid caps in a CBO, you separate it up by products, separate it up by AOVs, and then you just allow everything to spend. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back to that original one that Opening the Books episode I did with Nazrin. You also get, I talked through more of this strategy also in my Opening the Books with the guys from Beard Brand. We really talked through the entire ad account from this perspective there. So if you're confused on anything I'm saying here, go check that out. Those will both help you. But yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Say something about that. You're going to say
Yeah, yeah. No, that. I think you're just really speaking to, in the early stages of a business, it's all about where do you put your time and your money, your energy in the highest leverage places. And I think it was really clear that for us, that was ads and product. And yes, there's a, like, could our email be better? Yes. Like, could I have like more content seeding, like creator seeding? Yes. Like there were a lot of other things, and there still are a lot of other things that are not really up to the par I would like them to be. But at the end of the day, where we are in the business now, the thing that matters, like that's really going to drive us forward, is like more ads that really convert, and designing the right product at the right time, in the right season. And so I think that's where a lot of in like when you're building a business, right, there's just so many shiny objects, there's so many things you can do, there's lots of little piles of money everywhere. And I think I'm really lucky in that, like, I'm really comfortable in front of a camera, I'm really comfortable making content, I design the clothes for myself so they look good on me. So I think that's like an unfair advantage I have, and so I'm going to use the unfair advantage. But and also that the ads have been working, so there's that like positive what's it called,
feedback loop.
That's like just encouraging me to do more and more. So you know, if there was like a negative feedback loop, like maybe I wouldn't be as great as like at focusing on what.
Well, then we wouldn't put your time there, right? Because it would be like, oh, okay, well, this is not worth your time. Like, and there's just definitely been that element of this process, sort of iterative, of like, okay, this sort of thing that has worked in other brands that I first came suggesting, you know, that didn't work here. Mm-hmm. These other brands I did this with are apparently too different, whatever. But then this over here that we tried worked great. Okay, now go repeat a whole bunch of it. And so we stopped doing the things that didn't work, and we kept doing the things that did. And I think what you just said is so fundamental to the challenge of the earlier stage of e-commerce, of being an operator, which is shiny object. Yeah, like you just said, like your emails could probably get better, but like that just wasn't the most important thing next. Just get a couple of emails out per week. That's going to be good enough for now. And then, go from there. And yeah, for the people who also are like really engaged with a million different sources, and you're listening to my podcast and four others, and you're listening and you're on Twitter and all that stuff, e-commerce fuel, all these things are great. But the fundamental challenge with all of it is that you have this potential to go and just do too many things because somebody told you the next SaaS product is like the most important thing. Yeah. You're so good about this. Just like, nope, the next important thing is this. So let me ask you, Nazrin, maybe as we wrap up here, what is the next most important thing for Mixed by Nazrin? What are you working on now? What do you think is going to take us from where we are now to 10 million or whatever?
Yeah. So I actually have my three primary constraints doc where I talk about what is the biggest bottleneck in the business, like prove why is that, like, et cetera. So even though we've talked a lot about ad and product, right now, I think our big, and we're moving through it, but the biggest constraint is actually the supply chain, because, you know, we set up this really great content creation mechanism, ad creative mechanism. We sold a lot, but we sold on pre-order. Great for cash conversion cycle, not great in terms of customer experience, and then this the ops behind that. And so not like there's no product in the studio. Like there are some samples on racks, but other than that, like we can only ship out what we receive every day from our factory. It comes in and it goes out, and nothing sits on shelves. Not the worst problem to have, but it's still a problem. So right now, the biggest constraint is getting the supply chain up to speed, meaning ordering the right fabric at the right time so that we can move out our... Right now, we do a lot of small ordering. So we don't do like one big PO every couple months, because that's just too risky to bet at this size in this kind of brand. So what we do is we put in like a PO like a couple times a week, honestly. And that really allows us to work, okay, what's working in the ad account right now? How can we place a PO against that? Is the fabric already in stock at our factory? If yes, we can get those goods to our Brooklyn studio in a matter of like 3 weeks. So that really tight supply chain cycle, one, we already talked about how supply chain is so important for fashion. If you overpurchase your inventory, you can be dead, even if you have a great business. So it's not just about like not overpurchasing, but really having this tight PO cycle that's aligned with the ad account. So figuring that out first, I think that's a primary constraint. After that, it's how do we create creative at scale, which is not just me making the creative anymore, but us seeding that to different creators, influencers, customers, getting a variety of different kind of creative that we can use for the ad account, as well as more editorial and brand kind of focused creative that we're doing. I'm doing with our photographer, we're doing like these mixed profile shoots. So a mixture of like more bottom of funnel and then like top of funnel brand creative, I think rounds out the picture. And then after that is product. So those are like the three things.
So good. You also have this awesome habit.
I was genuinely prepared.
Okay. That's very, see, but yeah, that's awesome. You also have this awesome habit of like that. The fact that you have a doc with those three things is so not surprising to me, even though I didn't know that, because you do something also that is awesome, which is like every time we've done a sale or a product release, you like the within 24 hours of the end of the sale, you or of the product release, you've got a little deck put together. That's just like what products move the most, what creative is taking off in the ad account the most, what products move the least, what could we have done better, what did we do great? And taking the time to think through and document these things is going to help you. Like, I mean, every time you say that, I freak out about it and I pass it along to my team. I'm like, guys, look at what Nazareth made, because it helps all of us just say, I do, because not everybody does this, Nazareth. I mean, it's probably obvious to you, but like, you know, it's really, really helpful. It sets everybody up for success for the next time you do it. And here's the truth about what you just said, which is that by avoiding catastrophic mistakes, like, you know, your instinct to keep OPEX low before, your ordering plan, you know, staying on pre-order is going to maybe hurt your growth a little bit, but it also helps your cash. Not over ordering means that you don't have this problem of just like sitting on inventory for forever, all this stuff. As long as your goal is not to make it to $100 million like in 2 years, right? If your goal is a more realistic timeline, the biggest risk to that goal is that you like completely break the business along the way and can't get there. You don't have a crazy goal. I think right now, when we did open the books, it was $100 million in 25 years. So it was a pretty slower timeline. Now I think we've shortened that sum, right? I think now you think like 10, maybe somewhere in that range is more what you think about. That's still totally reasonable. I think a 10-year timeline is plenty of time to build. Okay, that means you just, especially in these earlier stages where things are volatile and challenging, it's harder to plan revenue because forecasts, like I said, the future is just too unlike the past. You know, you don't have a big team. And that the thing you got to do is just not break the business. You got to keep growing and you got to not break the business. Just keep moving. And to me, like all of these things that you're talking about are like perfectly aligning your behaviors with that goal. Okay, what are the bottlenecks? What are the things that I should focus on if I really want to keep moving this forward? And then how do I not break it along the way, basically, by not being dumb on cash? So the next thing, you're right. Supply chain's got to, we probably can't get as big as we want if everything is on very long pre-order timelines, even though it helps our cash now. And so now we got to go fix that, et cetera. Okay, now we got to figure out at some point how to make it so you don't have to make all the creative, because while you're uniquely good at it, you also aren't the only person who's good at making creative, but you're probably the only person who can design your clothes. And if we can release more product more regularly, if we can design more marketing moments, that's going to be the thing that really pushes us forward, et cetera. So yeah, moving and shifting towards that along the way, again, all with this emphasis on sort of not breaking it as well. And even just like what you said about Q1, like having a moment of peace and not being just frazzled all the time and all that kind of stuff is really, really impressive. So, okay. Any last things that are your reflections on your state of the journey right now that you'd really want people to hear before we hang out?
I guess, yeah, I think one thing is as you grow a business, there's something different that's required of you at every stage. And I think the difficult thing is knowing at what stage you are in your business and at, you know, is this kind of the pivot point where you kind of need to change the way you're operating the business. And so I think my natural inclination is to be very like, you know, ROI driven. I want to see like a kind of a return on what I'm doing. And I think that works really well in the earlier stages. And I guess I wonder at what point you shift and kind of make, I don't know, not brand bets, but how do you become someone who, instead of, you know, building a $10 million business, can build a $100 million business? Because I think the foundation totally for those two businesses are very different. And I think the idea that, you know, you can be the kind of operator who builds a $10 million business and then at 10 million, you're going to be able to kind of shift your personality to be the kind of person who can, you know, build on a $100 million business. They're different foundations, they're different people, they're different characteristics. And so I love that about business. I love that it kind of forces you to change. And yeah, I think I'm just kind of wondering, like, at what point do I have to, I don't know, change the way I'm operating things, or maybe I don't at all. And that would just be a foolish decision.
Well, look, you're also fashion and apparel. Like it, you just you're you have to you have a different pathway to cultural resonance than other brands. Like you just you have to stay relevant in whatever audience that it doesn't have to necessarily be cool per se. Like it, you know, it just depends on who you're trying to target. I think, yeah, but you have to stay whoever that audience is, whoever those personas are, you do have to stay relevant to them, and you have to have some attention and capture some attention in there. And so to me, yeah, the way you're thinking about this is right, which is like, okay, there's a longer game here beyond just the Facebook return on a given day. And so how do we build for that? So that's awesome. You are a killer. It's a pleasure to work with you. I'm so grateful that you came on and have continued to be transparent about the business with people. And with this audience, I think there's a lot to learn from this conversation. So thanks so much for doing that. Do you want to send people anywhere to reach out for you, or should they not reach out to you? Is there anywhere people should follow you? They should just go buy a jumpsuit.
Yeah, you can look at the website. You can email me if you want. I'm not much on Twitter. Yeah. I read it, but I don't use it. So I'm mostly on Instagram.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Well, go to mixedbynazrin.com. Go check out the products there, and you can see what Nazrin is building. It's really, really cool. Thanks, Nazrin. Appreciate
it. Thank
you. Thanks as always for watching and for listening to this episode of the show. Make sure that you subscribe wherever you're doing that, wherever you're watching, wherever you're listening. And you can reach out to me if you're interested at podcast@ajfgrowth.com, or reach out to me on Twitter as well at Andrew J. Ferris, and see everything I'm doing at ajfgrowth.com. That's the place to follow up with me or reach out to see if you would like to work with AJF Growth in some capacity as well. And as always, I so appreciate my sponsors at More Staffing. My friends there are great. Virtual assistants can be helpful. Virtual professionals can change your business. Go to morenow.co/AF to get connected to them and add incredible talent from the Philippines to your e-commerce business as well. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time.